Our in-depth guest today is Og Stone, musician, comic, podcaster, and author of the new novel, The Ballad of Buttery Cake Ass. I got to know Og initially through his comedy act, Young Southpaw, in which he channels a sweet and often puzzled Southerner obsessed with music, literature, and popular culture in a pun-filled stream of consciousness rap. And I'm not sure that description even does it justice. You'll have to listen for yourself. In addition to comedy, Og is a singer, songwriter, and musician, playing in bands Og Stone and The Love Conspiracy, The Soft Close-Ups, Anti, Lullaby Oscillator, and Rockets Burst from the Street Lamps, among others. And he writes about music, books, comics, film, and food for a variety of publications. Og's previous books include the comic novel Off License to Kill and the memoir Nick Cave's Bar. His new novel, The Ballad of Buttery Cake Ass, was named one of Vulture Magazine's best comedy books of 2023. Og, welcome to KBOO.
Hey, thanks very much, Ken.
Now, Og, just listing your many talents and projects could take up most of this segment and has me wondering where to begin. What came first for you? I think it was music.
Oh, yeah, definitely music. It's always been music. I've been banned since, you know, I was like 12 years old. And then I'd had a temp job like the year after I graduated college at a bank. And I just started writing down these ideas on like the ticker tape from the adding machine.
Old technology, but it served you well, huh?
Yeah. And like after a while, I realized I had like a novel in there somewhere. And I started writing. You know, I was a big reader, always loved. At the time, I was reading lots of Martin Amis and Nabokov. And then I got into Pynchon and Don Levy. And yeah, I'm actually always surprised that I became a writer because music has always been my first passion. And then, you know, lately with the writing, I've combined the two. I write about music a heck of a lot. And, you know, the comedy stems a lot from the vast amount of just not quite useless, but maybe this is some musical knowledge I have rattling around my brain.
Well, yeah, you work all that in. And as mentioned in the intro, I first learned about you through your comedy act, Young Southpaw. I wondered how you got into stand-up, which, in my opinion at least, is probably the most terrifying of all the arts. And how'd you come up with that Young Southpaw alter ego?
It had been my New Year's resolution in 2018 to try stand-up comedy because I always just had a feeling I would like it. I've always been a huge fan of comedy. Monty Python was a huge influence on me. Kids in the Hall, you know, the Chris Rock specials. And I was moving that year from Los Angeles to actually, I ended up in Nashville, but I was in Florida for a bit on the way. And as I was driving, you know, these long hours in the car, you start to talk to yourself.
Yes, then, I used to do that.
Yeah. You know, you go a little bit crazy, like a week in a car on your own with all your worldly possessions around you. And so I just started recording these things that I thought were pretty funny. And for some reason, I have no idea why except for Nashville, I've never really lived in the South, but my voice will sometimes lapse into a Southern drawl. And when I was, you know, driving through Georgia and Alabama up to Nashville, it was definitely doing that. And I just started talking out these stories that I thought was really funny. And along the way, I saw the Who's Live Anyway show, which was hilarious. I'm a huge fan of Greg Proops' stuff. It was hilarious. And I thought, you know, there's something in it. I should do something with this. And then September rolled around and I had recorded the first Southpaw story. And I remembered my New Year's resolution, you know, to actually get on stage and do it. And so I was like, I better, you know, get my skates on. I've only got a couple months left. I had the basis of a story. And actually, I was studying Chinese astrology a lot at the time. And there's a thing in Chinese astrology called date selection, where you look at the calendar and, you know, with your birth chart, you come up with the ideal date for you to do certain activities. So I did this and I decided on October 4th. October 4th is going to be the day I, you know, do stand-up comedy for the first time. Took the day off work to, you know, prepare. And then I looked at all the listings around Nashville and there were no open mics on October 4th. But there was one in Memphis, 3 hours away. So I was like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. Drove out to Memphis to the P&H Cafe, and it just, everything seemed to be aligning. There was a huge picture of Elvis above the stage, you know, obviously, but I'm a huge, you know, Elvis fan. Burn in Love is one of my favorite songs of all time. And when I did it, I was seventh in the lineup, and I remember just being, you know, I have no idea what to expect, but you get on stage and having been on you know, in bands over the years, you know, you have other people around you and musical equipment, but with stand-up comedy, it's just
right.
You and a
That's
microphone.
Why it's so terrifying.
But as soon as I got that first laugh, I was hooked. And I, you know, I walked out of that club and drove 200 miles back home, you know, got in at like 2 a.m, but I was on top of the world. I loved it. And, you know, I really pushed that all through the up until the pandemic started.
So the Chinese were right. That was a fortuitous date. A lot of comedians, I think their first gig is a horror show usually, or they'll say, you know, they didn't get any laughs and they bombed on stage, but they still were addicted to it.
Yeah, or the weird thing is the first gig will go really good and then the second and third are just awful, which weren't awful, but they were definitely, I didn't get a lot of laughs. I got a couple like fist bumps at the end of the show. People have been like off in the corner. The majority of the audience were not understanding what I was saying.
Now, on to the next stage in your career, your artistic career. The new novel, The Ballad of Buttery Cake-Ass, is your third published book. The first, as you mentioned, was a comic novel. The second, that memoir, Nick Cave's Bar. How'd you go from music and comedy to writing these books?
Off License to Kill was an idea I had had in my head. I moved to London in 2003 to do some recording. With Ian Catt, who's Saint Etienne's producer. I'm a huge fan of his work. And I ended up living there for about 3.5 months. And I really just had like the time of my life. But being in London, you know, where the pub is just such a part of the culture, I was already drinking quite a bit. And just, you know, where the pub is such a part of the culture, it took that up several notches. And I was rereading all the old James Bond novels that I love.
Yeah,
my grandmother gave me all the cool 60s paperbacks that she had with those really cool covers. And when I got back to the States, I just had this the most ridiculous idea I'd ever had up to that point, which was the idea of James Vagabond of the British Drunken Secret Service. And I was like, I have to do something with this. And then, you know, I was thinking about it a lot, and I was like, oh, well, maybe I could have him go back in time to stop Prohibition from ever happening. And I love this idea. And I wrote the first draft in like 5 weeks, you know, like come home from work and just focused on that. And again, it was just too ridiculous for anyone to, I sent it to a lot of publishers. Everyone was like, this is too ridiculous. But I really believe
it. Which is not a bad thing.
No, I mean, that's what it's supposed to be, you know, a time traveling drunken secret agent. But yeah, so I revised it a number of times over the years. And then about actually 11 years ago now, I stopped drinking and I wasn't an alcoholic or anything. I just, you know, I was having like 3-day hangovers and it was just, you know, I had had my innings, I think. And I decided to revise Off License one more time and have it sort of be an ode to my drinking days and the fun that I had. And it's becoming easier to self-publish your own books at the time. So I did that and put it out. The people who have read it seem to think it's funny, which, you know, is great. And then Nick Cave's Bar in 1999, I was backpacking around Europe with a friend of mine after college. And I met a woman in Barcelona. Only that one night we ever hung out with a bunch of people on the beach. And at one point I said to her, Katie, do you like Nick Cave? And she said, man, I'm Australian. I love Nick Cave. He has a bar in Berlin, you know. I've never been there. I was meant to go when I lived there, but I never got around to it. So because this was the days before we were on the internet all the time, I took this information back to Alston, Massachusetts, where I was living, and told my best friend, Andy, who was also a huge Nick Cave fan. And without doing any further research whatsoever, we decided to go. So we drove from Boston to Newark, New Jersey. You know, the airport's like 4.5 hours away, flew to Berlin. And I mean, we thought we'd get off the plane and be like, where's Nick Cave's bar? Some would say, oh, it's over there.
Right. The corner of Third and Main.
Yeah. And we'd have the time of our lives at our favorite singer's bar. But as it turned out, no one had any idea what we were talking about. And everything was extremely difficult. We ended up in Prague after a couple of days, which, like, if you're looking for a bar in Berlin, isn't the ideal place to be. And as it turns out, I found out definitively 2 years ago that Nick Cave has never owned a bar anywhere.
Which I think the internet has taken away that sense of adventure, because you would have found that out within 5 minutes probably, huh?
Exactly. And been deprived of like this enormous bonding experience with my best friend. Like so many people said, you know, we would have hated each other after everything the two of you went through, but it really brought us closer. And then when I was doing Southpaw Law in 2019, I wanted to tell this Nick Cave's bar story as well. And I did a couple of shows and I intended on doing more until the world shut down. And then I had written up all my notes and I thought, you know, this would make a good book. So I kickstarted that in the fall. And yeah, I mean, people really seem to like it, which is great.
Yeah, and that came out in 2020. And the new book, The Ballad of Buttery Cake Ass, it's fiction, but it has a similar structure. It's a quest between the young narrator and his best friend. And this is also pre-internet, early 90s. They're looking for a perhaps mythical record called Live in Hungaria by a very obscure rock band called Buttery Cake Ass, which is how the title gets its name. And this is the early 90s, like I said. So it's a similar, it's fiction, it's not memoir, but I read it also has its spark, its inspiration in a real life incident, Og, when you were 15?
Yes. Over winter break in December 1991, my best friend and I, we used to like to make up fake bands to ask for at record stores.
Very clear in the book. There's a whole bunch. I love them.
Thank you. And over that winter break, the funniest thing I still have ever heard in my life was hearing my best friend Bri ask at Cutler's Records and Tapes in New Haven, Connecticut, if they had anything by Buttery Cake Ass. And the guy behind the counter like genuinely wanted to help us. You know, you could see it in his eyes. Like New Haven, you know, big college town. Lots of music going on, you know, alternative music was on the rise. Then there were lots of obscure bands with like long names, Ned's Atomic Dustbin, Meat Beat Manifesto. And so the guy says to us, is there any particular album you're looking for? And without missing a beat, I just said the first thing that popped into my head, which was Live in Hungaria.
Wow. Talk about stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
You've got that great subconscious there, Og.
I don't know what's, I think, yeah, all this is kind of an attempt to figure out what's going on down there. It's very music based. But the guy, like at that point, looked even more confused and said, do you mean Live in Hungary? And Brian and I both said, no, absolutely Live in Hungaria.
Oh, man, you were selling it.
Yeah. And like that feeling of trying to hold in that laughter has always stuck with me. And it's what I've all, whenever I do comedy, that's like what I try to get back to, that just utter absurd joy, which I think is like the impetus for Young Southpaw as well. And in fact, the book was written, the first draft was written as Young Southpaw until I decided I kind of wanted to go a little bit different with it.
Yeah, that joy I want to talk about, it has a similar vibe for me from the book and the movie High Fidelity, which talks about record collecting, music obsessions. It's a comedy, of course, but it also has that joy and that friendship and that that shared passion between the people in the movie and in your book. And I think many of us can identify with that passion for something, whether it's music, literature, art, comedy, and how it can seem like the most important thing in the world when you're young. I'm thinking on your tour here, you must be meeting a lot of fellow souls who are either had that experience or are still having that experience, that obsession with music and record collecting.
Yeah, it's so great. And one of the things I've loved is, you know, back in the early 90s when I was a teenager, you know, hanging out at record stores all day and talking about music and like being on tour. I've been doing lots of readings at record stores because, you know, Ballad of Buttery Cake Ass is so, you know, music centric, you know, getting to talk to like-minded souls who had, you know, holy grails of their own that they were looking for, who used to, you know, make up fake bands in high school with their friends. You know, I had no idea it was such a universal thing for, you know, music obsessives to make, you know, up fake bands, but I'm really glad it is because it's a lot of fun. There's a discography at the end of the book. It's like 50 pages of all fake bands that are related to Buttery Cake Ass. And it took me an extra month to write that. But I had so much fun.
It must have been a hoot. Now, talking about record stores, and they do play an extremely important part in the book, you'll be appearing at a legendary record store in Portland tomorrow, Music Millennium. It's been around since 1969, pretty much in the same location. And in fact, it's the oldest record store I read in the whole Pacific Northwest. Sadly, there are not too many of these places left due to online stores, streaming music sites, the way most people consume music now. What do you think we're losing when these local shops close?
So much. record shopping to me was always just so much more than about just the music. I remember my parents had like a minivan that could fit like seven or eight people. And at least once or twice a month in high school, my best friends and I would like all pile in there and drive all around Connecticut, hitting all these stores. And it was just such a bonding experience, you know, talking about everything, you know, your lives and what you wanted to do. And of course, all the music you're getting into, but other art forms as well, what books you were reading, what movies you saw. And then, you know, a big part of Buttery Cake Ass is that the owners of the record shops in it were their names are Walter and Fred, who worked at Brass City Records in Waterbury, Connecticut, who had a huge impact on my life with just, you know, they never treated us as dumb kids. They were always, you know, really eager to introduce us to all this new music that they loved. And I just always thought that was just incredibly special. So I've, you know, in my own way, this is homage to them as well.
Yeah, it's a kind of a love letter to record stores and also to kids starting their own bands. Well, Og, thanks so much for talking with us today. I hope that Music Millennium has a pristine copy of Live in Hungary ready for you when you're there tomorrow night.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ken. I'm really looking forward to it.
We've been talking with Og Stone, musician, comedian, podcaster, and author of the new novel, The Ballad of Buttery Cake Ass. Og will be reading and signing books at Music Millennium in Southeast Portland tomorrow, Thursday, July 20th at 6 p.m. You can find out more about Og, the new book, and all his upcoming events at ogstone.com. This is Ken Jones for KBOOS News In Depth.